Hey guys, this is Hunter Levine, and thank you for listening to the Captain's Collective podcast. Brought to you by Skinny Water Culture, Hell's Bay Boatworks, Turtle Box Audio, and Orvis Fly Fishing. Recently on a trip to Louisiana with my friends at Guiding Flow, I got a chance to slip away for a day and spend some time on the water with an up-and-coming guide, Ty Hibbs. For many, when they think about Louisiana, they think about the incredible food, the unique culture, and of course, the world-renowned fishery known for its large bull reds. Ty's love for his home waters stretches beyond that. And in this episode, he warns us of overlooking the fun that can be had chasing slot reds in vegetation and waiting for large jacks in the shallow flats. He also discusses kayak fishing and shares some common mistakes he sees anglers and guides make. I had a blast chasing fish in the marsh with Ty, and now understand why he's earned so much respect in his region. I hope that you enjoy this time we had together. Thank you for listening. This is the Captain's Collective.
I'll say it's anything you choose, I think it picks you. You know, it's genetic.
Let everything else stop in the world and just be quiet. And it's amazing where your mind goes at that point and where it doesn't go. And sometimes just that quiet space is what we need, and especially in this day and age.
If you have a fly rod in your hand, it's this tool that takes you to beautiful places. You meet hopefully wonderful people, and it's just this cherry on top of this outdoor adventure.
When the fish is coming, that shot within a shot, that timer starts. Beep, 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 beep,
beep, beep, beep. No one else knew anything anyway, and you just might definitely making it up as you're going along. But
so what Grandpa and Dad would tell me is like, all right, where's the old big trout laying out there? Where's his shaving cream on the water? Where's he been shaving this morning? So look for his shaving cream on the water, and that's where he's going to be.
All right. Hey, Ty, thanks so much for hanging out and joining us on the podcast. Had a great day on the water today in your home waters of Louisiana. And I'm looking forward to talking a little bit about what makes this place so special. But before we get into that, could you just introduce yourself, what you do, and also tell us about how you first kind of fell in love with the outdoors?
Yeah, man. Appreciate the invite. Love what you're doing on here. And so pretty much my name's Ty Hibbs. I'm born and raised down here in Southeast Louisiana. Grew up over there in Metairie and Kenner, born in Kenner, pretty much grew up there for a while, lived in Metairie for a while. And then over there in Slidell now on the northeastern side of the lake. But I'm a fly fishing guide. We do a bunch of sight fishing, fly fishing, whatever. Pretty much sticked with the shallow water stuff. Redfish for the most part, I love the jacks too. And pretty much I'm always doing something. I'm on the water whether I'm working or not. That's just kind of what I love to do. So, but grew up in it down here, grew up just like everybody else that I fish with down here. Grew up kind of just, catching trout. Trout's kind of the thing down here. And still to this day, people are so mad at them little 12-inch creatures. They're fun to catch, they're decent fish to eat. But grew up doing that, popping corks in Delacro, Point Lahash, on the west side some too. But redfish, but it wasn't really... Nothing what we do now was even a thing when I was a kid. Fly fishing was definitely not a thing. No, but the only fly fishing we did was like for bluegill and all and a little bitty things. And then redfish was fun, when we were a kid to catch a big one. It was fun, but it was like, all right, enough of that. Where's the trout at? That's just kind of, everybody was mad at him, That's just what we did. I mean, I remember me and my buddy Sean in a little flatboat in high school and, running around like maniacs being pissed that we're trying to catch 50 trout. And then like you realize one day that's cool and all, but like watch this redfish eat a fly and then I could catch it tomorrow if I let it go. And it's so much more rewarding than.
Who kind of introduced you to fly fishing?
So pretty much it was my uncle and my cousin. They'd been fishing down the road forever, and I kind of grew up doing that with them. My grandpa did a bunch of fishing too, but it was pretty much my uncle and my cousin. Because me and I have two younger brothers too, and that's what we did every single weekend. We just went out there. mostly to Point Lahash. Point Lahash is kind of the place we grew up fishing, out of Beschel's Marina, which some people don't even know if they're still a thing anymore. You know, a lot's changed in that area.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, it was pure salt water. It was oysters and, you know, the Mississippi River really had nothing to do with it. We caught trout pretty much everywhere. And now, I mean, a lot of people that know now, that we have the Mardi Gras cut, we call it there. It's a cut that actually blew through in the river. It had come through a couple times before, but it blew through the river levee in 2012 on Mardi Gras Day. That's why they call it the Mardi Gras cut. And it's pretty much like, it's kind of like Venice now. Like, the river flows through there. So, you know, it's real fresh, which is not a bad thing. Some people hate it because speckled trout are not going to live there anymore. Not, like, close in, at least, which, whatever. But you catch bass, you know, you catch redfish down there. It's just, it's pretty cool because I've watched that place change so much. I'm nowhere near as old as some of these guys have been doing it longer than I've been alive down here. But at least in my short life, I watched it change, and it's taught me a lot, stuff like that.
Yeah, what do you feel like it's taught you as you just kind of have watched it change over the years?
You know, it's the main thing is, like, you can't take anything for granted, you know? I mean, we have such a great fishery here, probably one of the better fisheries on the entire Gulf Coast, and it's not really like anything's gotten, you know, it's not a bad thing that it's changed over there. It's just like, you know, we used to do things a certain way, and people get in that rhythm of, only there, you know, people, I hear it all the time. Somebody's like, oh man, you know, this place sucks now. I used to go to this point and catch all the speckled trout I wanted 25 years ago. And I'm like, well, that's great. But, like, the river changes, you know, things change. You got to adapt. Mm-hmm. But it's taught me to adapt for sure, you know, how things have changed. And just like redfish, I use redfish as the example just because I'm chasing redfish so much throughout the year. And, you know, just like today when we were fishing, I mean, places that they should be, they just weren't in the morning. And it looked pretty and, you know, it just wasn't right. And then we finally got in a spot where we saw a good bit of them and, you know, wind was blowing, but we made a couple good shots happen. And there's no telling, those fish might not be there tomorrow. They might be more tomorrow, but, you know, having to adapt to everything, I feel like makes you such a better fisherman just for any fish species.
Yeah, one of the things that's interesting, too, is it seems like a lot of the people who fish around here have a huge, huge scale of where they go to. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of traveling, hopping around. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say as far as the locals around here, and it all comes back to, like, trout fishing, you know? Like, people, I mean, there's people that, you know, leave from where we were in Delacroix today, and they run out to Chandelier Islands. I mean, that's in a bay boat, that's going to take you an hour, you know? I mean, they're hauling across 20 miles of open water, you know, plus 20 miles of in the marsh just to go catch a trout. So people do some traveling and all, but I feel like majority of your locals are kind of creatures of habit. Like, if you got a guy that, you know, he's trout fishing or red fishing or whatever it may be, and he's been launching where it used to be Brenton Sound Marina, it's Hopedale Marina forever, and he's just going to fish the same little route he does over and over. I feel like that's more than probably 70% of the fishermen down here. They don't move around too much. I'd say as far as what we do, sight fishing guys, we move around a lot just because it changes throughout the year. You know, you're not going to catch, you can catch redfish in the same area throughout a whole year, but it may not be very good in January as it was in August or vice versa, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of the impression I got was you guys just have tons of water. I mean, tons of, you know, shallow, skinny water around here. In what ways has that environment, you feel like, maybe helped shape you as a guide or an angler, just having to navigate so much terrain?
Yeah. And it's we do a lot of running sometimes, just like today. I mean, it's early spring, you know, it's March. I'm not too much of a fan of that mid-February to mid-March just because the fish move around a lot. The grass hadn't really started. It's kind of hot, you know. The things we do on the edge of where we're in oysters and all, that's kind of getting hot. They don't want to be in that. So it's kind of a weird time. But it's just there's so much water. I always get clients all the time. They're like, how do you, you know, there's so much water. Why do we go here? I'm like, well, you know, based on this tide, based on this wind, based on what the water looks like, that's why we came here. And I think that just takes experience at that point. You know, you're not going to pull up just pull up down here and pick a bank and be like, this is it. And I mean, you could pull up to a bank and see 100 redfish. You never know, you know. Or I mean, I've had people call me and, you know, coming in, friends of mine, and fish, and I tell them, you know, kind of what to look for, and they'll go 2-3 days and be like, dude, what is going on, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I'm like, oh, you should have fished this drift, you know, 50 yards off of this bank instead of right on it. It's little things like that, and I really think that takes, like, just doing it. You got to do it a bunch. You don't sit on a sofa for 10 days, go out there on day 11 and catch 30 redfish. That's just not how it works.
When you were a kid, what, out of all the different outdoor things that you did around Louisiana, what was the first one that you felt like it was really your something you grabbed onto yourself and not just something that your family did?
I mean, it I think it was really fishing, just because, like, fishing's so accessible for everybody. When I was really young, I mean, there was a park by my house. It was called Kenner City Park, and they had bass and all in there, and I'd throw a rod on my hop on my bike and go bass fish over there. It's just you know, it's right there. It's super accessible, and I feel like fishing was just I can't remember a time where I wasn't fishing. I mean, I played baseball, you know, all through high school and all, and like any chance I had, we were fishing. And then, you know, when I started driving, it was like, oh, you know, let's go crawfishing, let's go duck hunt, let's go. You just got into more and more things as they became more accessible to me. But fishing's one thing that, like, that's my number one, you know. I always tell people, like, I probably work 100 days a year of bringing clients or so around that range, and I'm probably on the water another 150 on top of that, just because, like, if it's pretty and, you know, if I think it's going to be good, and that's just what I do. That's what I like to do, fishing, duck hunting in the winter, you know, doing something, whether it doesn't have to be just redfish. I do a lot of stuff from jacks to tarpon to, you know, sockeye and bass and bluegill, whatever it may be. If, you know, I'm always doing something.
Mm-hmm. When did you decide that you wanted to become a guide? Because, I mean, a lot of people grow up and they love hunting and fishing, but only a very limited amount of people actually make that jump.
I think my thing with it was I first started out doing it, you know, just being around a lot of people that I hung out with, what they were doing, like the bay boat thing, you know, going out with live shrimp and catching redfish and trout and keeping them and doing all that. And that's, you know, that's just kind of fly fishing. Well, sight fishing in general wasn't really like as popular as it is today. I hate to call it a fad, but I feel like it's definitely that fad type thing the past like 5 years. And it's grown tremendously, which is not a bad thing. I feel like when I first started, I was looking at it as, oh, you know, I just run a bay boat and I like to fish. So, like, why not bring some people and let them enjoy it? I'll fish and all. And then it wasn't until I started doing some more just sight fishing stuff, you know, just going around sight fishing redfish, where I was like, this is really cool. And it was like so apparent that I enjoyed watching that fish eat as much as I enjoyed catching any fish. Like, me personally catching it was not the goal anymore. It was like, wow, that was so cool watching that fish eat. And it didn't matter that I wasn't doing it. And then, you know, it kind of clicked. There was a buddy of mine, Jonathan Allen, who had been guiding a little bit before me. And he did a bunch of fly fishing and all. And he was like, oh, you know, well, yeah, you should do this and find a little skiff or something like that, and I'll show you a little bit. And I had always brought my fly rod before and a little flatboat or something and just throwing at redfish, but pulling a skiff and all, I was like, this is really cool. And then I kind of just threw myself into it because I had some people just calling me, and I was like, you know what, I'll just figure it out. And I just started pulling around, and, you know, you get stuck a few times. I think the very first trip I ran, I'll never forget. It was like as low as the water can possibly get in Hopedale. And I was just running around like a maniac, like I normally do, and just not really paying attention much, and ran just right across this nice little oyster flat and started pulling as far as I could while the water was falling, and got stuck on. I had to get out and push my guys off of it. And I was like, oh God, what the hell am I doing? You know, but it was a good day. I remember we caught a big bull red that day, and a couple slot fish and all. And it was like the first couple of times I did it, watching the enjoyment that people got, that have, you know, it was something so cool to me, And then seeing somebody that has never seen this before react to what they just saw, watching a, you know, a 6-pound redfish or a 26-pound redfish open up their mouth and swallow a fly, and them just like losing their mind about how cool it was. That's when I was like, this is so cool. Like, this is what I want to do. You know, I want to show people this. Like, they got to see this. Like, I can't just keep this for me.
Yeah. And I think that one of the things I enjoy about traveling and fishing is, you know, you go around and there's all these different cultures. There's all these different fishing styles. Like, you showed me something today that y'all do with, you know, the push pole that,
yeah.
You know, how, because y'all got such thick mud, you know, you don't actually push with the push pole. You can just actually tug yourself back by sticking it in the mud. And there's just all sorts of little tiny little things like that that I feel like are really neat and a great reason why to get out and explore. And you had mentioned earlier that, you know, we're creatures of habit. You know, we go somewhere, you catch 8 trout, you think to yourself, all right, you go next time, you catch 4 trout. You catch 1 trout, and you catch 10 trout, and you just go, well, if I just go enough times, I'll keep catching trout.
Exactly.
But, you know, I think if we can see anglers like spending more time traveling and seeing different cultures and seeing and actually spending time on the boat with guides who have really dedicated themselves to understanding their fishery and what happens, man, it just opens up, you know, what you said, it opens up their eyes. It opens up people's eyes to just how incredible these fish and these places are. And one of the things I love about coming here to Louisiana is, I mean, when you think of Louisiana, culture comes up. I mean, that word, you know, there's definitely a culture here. And I think a lot of people, the cat's out the bag on redfish in Louisiana.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
I don't think we're breaking any ground.
No.
But give me the rundown about what makes Louisiana special, because you're a Louisiana native, so you know you even got the slang a little bit. So give us the rundown.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, like we talked about earlier, I like traveling around and seeing other things, and that's what taught me a lot too. And as far as like open up my eyes to say, hey, you know, why do these other places release so many fish? Why don't they keep them? And doing that research and being like, oh, well, you know what? If I'd let that fish go, I could catch it tomorrow. If I keep it, it's gone, you know? But as far as Louisiana goes, man, I mean, it's an awesome place. I mean, I love doing things outside of the state. I love, you know, hanging out in Florida, messing with tarpon and all. I love, you know, going to the Bahamas with a buddy of mine, catching those bonefish. That's a blast. But nobody could ever get me to leave this place just because there's so many things we do here. And as far as red fishing goes, it's really hard to beat, man. I mean, just like you saw today, like, we had some fish that were kind of acting up spooky today.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, my spooky is drastically different from, you know, a spooky fish for y'all.
Same with clean water.
Oh, yeah.
Because we pulled up, you said, man, this water is clean. I thought you were joking a little bit. I'm like,
no, I get that a lot. It's just different, you know. We have mud, you know, that dark mud, and it's such a different place. Like, as far as just looking at redfish, we can go and catch redfish so many different ways in so many different types of water here, over oysters, over sand, you know, deep jigging, on top waters, over grass, over mud, you know, you name it, like, Louisiana's got it. And I don't feel like any other place that has these fish has anything like that. You know, there's so many different, I mean, we catch them, like I was telling you today. I mean, we'll catch bass and you'll see bluegill running around with redfish. I mean, they're just,
caught a bass. I almost had the Louisiana slam.
Yeah, pretty much.
Depending on who you talk to, I jumped one.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I mean, it's just things like that. You know, that shocks people. I get clients and they catch a bass and they're like, are these the same largemouth? I'm like, yeah, same thing. They're like, oh, I thought they don't live in salt water. I'm like, well, I mean, this is like really, really fresh water. And they're like, oh, I thought redfish don't live in fresh water. I'm like, well, it's a different place here. You know, they do different things and they can live in, I've seen redfish in the craziest stuff ever in Louisiana, you know? And I think it's such a diverse place and it's such a forgiving place to people too. It can, I mean, there's days it'll just beat you down. And I mean, anywhere is like that though. But there's days when you go, man, and everything's right. The wind's right. The tide's right. and you see these fish acting crazy, and you run over one with the boat, it hits the bottom of the boat while you're poling, and it turns around, and so you slap a flyby and it eats, and you're like, what is wrong with this fish? And like, nothing, he's just happy, you know, he's got nothing to worry about, he's got food. It's just like, that's just, you just can't take it for granted here. Mm-hmm. And I feel like sometimes we lose the fact of how cool this place really is.
Yeah, and I got a lot of questions about Cajun cuisine and just some of the kind of must-dos, must-sees around this area. But I agree. I think it's a beautiful area. But you had mentioned you have concern. You know, you're young and you haven't been around guiding for a super long time in this area. But there's also a culture of just absolutely whacking and stacking, and that's what a lot of people know this place to be.
Yeah.
There are a lot of fish, but just share with us what are your concerns there?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, man. I mean, there's still it's still a great fishery. There's still tons of fish compared to elsewhere, but you talk to anybody, man. I mean, anywhere you go, nothing's ever as good as it once was. Mm-hmm. But we've definitely seen a change over especially the past 5 or 6 years. And, I feel like redfish are kind of under the gun with everything right now. You know, our trout fishing has declined, and doesn't matter what the reason is. There's many reasons why. There's a lot of things against the trout as well. But so you take away those, I'd say when I was a kid, 80% of people fishing in Louisiana, let's say every Saturday, Sunday, were trout fishing. Now I bet you it's 50-50, or maybe more people redfishing now just mm-hmm. because trout aren't as easy to catch as they were. And you got more people, so let's just say you got more people bait fishing, recreational anglers, and there's far more recreational anglers than are guides or anything else to worry about. But let's just say you got your recreational anglers targeting redfish more and killing more redfish. So I mean, which our limits are what they are, and no foul against them, but at some point you'd think we'd have to start considering some other options and looking at things. So you got that for one. There's tenfold the amount of guides now, and not just fly fishing and all that. Obviously there's more sight fishing guys, but there's thousands of more guys in bay boats mm-hmm. with dead shrimp and popping corks, and they catch the hell out of them. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And they're keeping if they got 3-4 guys on a boat, that's potentially 20 redfish. And multiply that by 200 guides working out of one area, that's a lot of fish. So you got that, then we got guys bow fishing and all, which I don't feel that the bow fishermen kill as many fish. I know they don't, because there's just not as many of them. Mm-hmm. But my thing is with it, it's not really them killing the fish that bothers me. It's just the fact that you got mud boats and airboats driving around all hours of the night. So when you got boats running around the daytime, boats running around the nighttime, when the hell these fish rest,
Mm-hmm.
And you got that, and on top of that, you throw in pogey boats, like we talked about a little bit today, and putting a lot of pressure on our breeding stock redfish. And just any time, I'd rather lose a good bit of slot fish than I would breeding stocks, because at least you kill a 6-pound slot fish, how many more babies is he gonna have? How many more eggs is he gonna lay? And more redfish is he going to make than that bull red that's, already spawning right now. And mm-hmm. that's probably spawned multiple times, multiple generations. He's perfected it, him and any of those bigger bulls, that's your future there for sure. And I just hate to see it. And it's not any one thing, mm-hmm. but at some point you throw in all that, and then you throw in the amount of land we've lost on top of that for all these small redfish to grow. That's just 5 or 6 things right there against a redfish, on top of the amplitude of pressure from just us sight fishermen too. Because, mm-hmm. Everything presents a problem. Put all that together and you're eventually going to see a change. And we definitely have.
Yeah. And, one of the things that I've noticed in traveling around and spending time in areas like Mosquito Lagoon and, South Florida, and just some of the fisheries that are really, really struggling and really trying to get the word out about what they need with their water, mostly, but also with, angling practices and et cetera, is, you know, even if you're in a healthy fishery that, you know, maybe your fishery can sustain higher harvest numbers, you know, you still need to have your eyes wide open, and you still need to approach that with respect, and you still need to really just try to do, it's not just about how much can we do, but how great can this be? Those are two different questions.
No, you know? No doubt. I mean, that's my thing with it. And I was lucky enough to realize that at a young age, you know, like I realized that I enjoyed fishing more than, you know, catching, more mm-hmm. than killing, more than eating, stuff like that. You know, I always say, like, I always tell people when they talk about, you know, oh, we crushed the redfish, we kept 50 of them, you know, and last week, you know, fishing 4 or 5 days, I'm like, that's cool, but a steak tastes way better. Which, I mean, when it comes down to it, like, it's not the 1930s, you know, we're not trying to live off the environment. Yet some people can and some people do, and that's perfectly cool. But, like, you know, it's 2021 now. We need to start being proactive. There's no reason you should look at our fishery and say, I mean, we can all agree that it's great. You know, it's awesome. It's a great place to be. It's something that everybody should experience. But you can't sit here and say, "Now we're good, just leave it. It's fine. We don't have to do anything." You should always be doing something. Mm. You know, the question should always be, "How great can we make it?" Not, you know, "Oh, we're good. Just leave it alone. Kill them all, and we'll worry about this tomorrow."
Yeah, or we'll wait till a problem arises and is just blatantly obvious, rather than being proactive and really looking through the data, looking through the numbers, and trying to be proactive. I agree. If it's cool with you, I'd love to transition too, just to talk about a little bit you had mentioned you target jacks here. You obviously do redfish. There's a lot of different ways. What's your favorite fish to target here, and how do you like to do it?
I mean, it's hard for me to, I'd say one of my favorite things on earth, I'd say the two favorite things, because I love them both equally, is probably the slot fish in the spring. You know, like I was just talking about, I feel like we're just a couple weeks away from getting all that good grass and, you know, happy tailing fish and all. It's hard to beat the slot fish. I feel like I always tell people, you want to come and just get shots, you come April, May, June, and, you know, you're going to see fish, you know, you're going to get shots. It's slot fish. They act right. They eat, you know, they do the right things. But the other thing I really love is the jacks, man. I love the jacks in the summer. And we'll mess with the bull reds too, but the jacks are one thing that are just like, it's a smart fish, you know, when they're shallow. It's a mean fish. They just come, I always say they come and take your lunch and punch you in the gut sometimes. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, they were put on this earth to just mess things up. And they're mm-hmm. such a cool fish for it. And that I spent a lot of time doing that in the summer. And it's really like, a jack around here is like the hated creature because it messes up trout fishing. You always hear people like, "Oh, these damn jacks," you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, you know, I just stay quiet in the corner. I'm like, they're really cool. Leave them alone, and that's cool. You know, I'll just keep fishing them.
Yeah. How do you like to target them?
One of my favorite things. I mean, I throw a lot of like, there's a lot of reefs and all our fish, and I'll go run around looking for them just schooled up in open water, and I'll throw tuna poppers at them, catch them like that on spinner rods. And I'll tease them up with tuna poppers, let people throw flies in there. But I think the biggest adrenaline rush that, like, I get all year is seeing a jack on a flat pushing that big old, like, submarine wake down a bank, you know. And I'll see them, they're tailing. Just their tails are out of the water and, you know, 8 inches of water on a sand flat. And just, it is so crazy when you see a jack push, because, like, a redfish push, you know, he's moseying down a bank. Mm-hmm. A jack push, it's like a fire drill. It's like you see him 300 yards away, and it's like, hurry, because that's how fast he's moving. I mean, they're trucking faster than you could pull, faster than your trolling motor's moving sometimes. Hmm. And they're just coming down the flat, and they're smart. A lot of people think they're kind of dumb and you know, not too bright, just because when most people encounter jacks, they encounter them in just a feeding frenzy. Which, yeah, we can throw spark plugs into that. They'll probably eat them.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're on a flat, I mean, their eyes are big, man. I mean, they're smart. They're a smart fish. They have a bigger brain than most fish. And they get shallow, and especially when they're shallow in clean water, like, you're not making a 15-foot cast and catching them. I mean, you're making – I like to get my guys, you know, when we see them a couple hundred yards away sometimes. And I like to get set up. When they're 100 yards away, that's like, you know, like, get ready. And then they get inside of like 150 feet. And we're like, okay, you know, let's get that line out and pick. They kind of get on a, they have good eyes, like I said, and they kind of get on a line. So let's get that line out there 60, 70 feet if possible, you know, make a long cast. And then as soon as they get within like 20 feet, start ripping it, and they're going to see it. Mm-hmm. And if you do everything right, and I always tell people the biggest thing you could ever do with fly fishing jack shallow is stop or slow down. Like, they want it moving so fast. Sometimes I tell people start two-hand stripping it. Just it's got to be moving. Mm-hmm. And that's hard for people to do. You know, people aren't used to doing that. They're used to just barely stripping or whatever. And you know, it's a lot of things that go into that. And then you hook the fish, and it's a whole bag of more things to go into, you know. You hook the fish. If he runs right at you, you just got to hold on for dear life and keep it tight, wait till he gets away, and, you know, jab him again because they have a hard mouth, and you got to really put that hook into him. And then clear your line, you know, try to get him on a reel, watch your drag. There's so many things that go into it. By the time you get that fish to the boat, it's like, holy crap, I earned this, you know. Mm-hmm. I know, like, you know, people, you know, talk about tarpon fishing and all, and tarpon fishing's awesome. I'm no expert in it by any means. I've caught a few and I enjoy it, but this is like my tarpon fishing, the jacks, you know. I feel like you get that adrenaline rush, and it's so rewarding when you finally get that fish up, especially on a flat. And it's even cooler if you were wade fishing and doing it, like walking around. It's just like, it's not cooler. It's just like so much more just in your face and, you know, adrenaline.
Yeah. And that's something I talked with a guy, Adam Hudson. He's a guide out of, my general area, Caribel. And, he was talking about wade fishing for redfish and how he, you know, he has a skiff, but he loves the stealth. He loves speed. He likes being a little bit more on their level. It was like, I remember when you'd said that. You know, I remember the first time I ever killed a deer off the ground.
Yeah.
And it was a doe, but it was exhilarating because I was on the ground and all of a sudden, man, that deer looks way bigger. And, you know, your field of vision oftentimes is obviously more limited, you know, because you're not up in the air.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it's just a different experience. I feel like that with wading, you know, I'm thinking,
oh yeah,
you're in the water and that thing's going crazy.
Oh, it's wild. And there's a few times a year where we'll get a chance to wade fish a redfish, and like, it's mostly little small reds, like, you know, smaller than like 26 inch reds or so. But it's just so like fun sneaking up on them, getting out of the boat. And the jacks are really like, you know, there's even fewer opportunities that we get out of the boat and get to, you know, really sneak up on them just because they're always moving so fast. But man, like, I've caught a few jacks on foot in, you know, 10 inches of water over some sand where they ate the fly like 10 feet from me. And it almost scares the crap out of you. Like, I mean, they come rushing at it and you're kind of sitting there thinking like, if he hits me in the shin right now, I'm going to have a bone sticking out of my leg because that's just how aggressive they are and how mean they are.
Yeah, so I remember when I was in high school, we were back in a creek, and all of a sudden, before I noticed the jack, because he was kind of down in a deeper section, like a little channel, all of a sudden, these mullet started jumping onto the shore. And I like looked over, I'm like, they're committing, you know, suicide. You know, they're jumping on the shore. And next thing you know, dude, a huge jack comes up and just blowing these things up. And it was the coolest thing just to see just how aggressive that fish is.
Yeah, dude, they're so awesome. I'll throw every now and then, if I got some buddies of mine that hadn't really caught one or something like that, I'll go get some mullet. And, you know, it's funny. Sometimes I'll just throw a cast in at the first group of mullet I see, and I don't care, dude. They could be 15-inch mullet, giant mullet, you know? And I'll sit there, put them on a hook, and I'm like, there you go. Throw it like a baseball at them if you can, you know? And they're like, oh, you don't think that's too big? I'm like, I've seen them chase, you know, full-size redfish.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't care. If it's moving and they think they can, you know, get their mouth around it, I mean, they're gonna just try to attack any kind of fish in that size range.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so cool. I've thrown some big mullet at them before when, you know, with a circle, just a straight circle hook on a leader. And the mullet's like jumping out of the water, trying to get out of it with the hook in its mouth. And it's just, it's so crazy. Like, I always tell people, like, jacks are put on this earth to just keep things in check. Like, keep the mullet in check, keep all the smaller fish in check.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the destroyer.
Oh yeah, yeah. I agree with you. I think that's a, really cool thing to kind of build a little bit of your business around too. Just because I think a lot of times it's a bycatch.
Oh yeah.
You know, and to be able to kind of target them anytime you know, bycatches are always easy, right? Mm. Well, that was easy. Well, of course it was easy. Yeah. You weren't trying, right?
Yep.
But anytime you, it doesn't matter if it's hunting, if it's fishing. All of a sudden, you know, when you're targeting something, it gets harder.
Oh yeah, always. That's what I always tell people. And I've had clients come and they're like, "Oh yeah, we went out to here, you know, and fished these rigs. We got tired of catching jacks." I'm like, "Yeah, that's cool. Well, this ain't it."
Yeah.
And they're like, they see it pushing, you know, way down the bank, shallow, and they go throw their line out, and it's got three or four bows in it, and the jack just comes and swirls at the fly and takes off, and they're like, "What happened?" I'm like, "This ain't the rigs. You gotta fish that fish, you know. It's one-on-one. Like, that's what I love about it."
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you have a fish in that environment too, in a feeding frenzy, it's not processing and thinking the same way, because it can't. You cannot be slow in a group and get food. You'll never eat. You'll die. You'll starve yourself, right? And it's funny because we were talking about turkeys too. It's like something can be really smart, but in the wrong environment, I mean, humans are no different, is going to start making mistakes and slip up and be easy. You know, once a turkey sees a little Jake, things are different.
Yeah, loses
once
his
a
mind.
When a jack's in a school, things are different. But when a jack is solo,
oh yeah,
you know, it's not in the school anymore. And it's not in that deep water by the rig, and you know, I mean, that's just shallow water fishing in general. And it's something that I thought was interesting about you too is, so in my mind, you know, coming over here to Louisiana, you know, when I'm thinking about Louisiana redfish, I'm often thinking about big old bull reds, and you have an affection for slot fish, but not because they're in the slot and you can keep them. But make the case for us about why you so, like to target slot fish.
My thing with the slot fish, I mean, you know, everybody, like you just said, you know, everybody thinks of bull reds, which bull reds are awesome. I'm not knocking them by any means. I love doing it.
You're going to have a bunch of bull reds protesting you and saying you're discriminating them.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, I love them. I mean, they're awesome, you know, and you know, in the summertime when we get them, you know, wherever we are that time of year, it's awesome to see them if they're schooled up or if they're on a flat. And like the winter time, you know, late in the winter, in December, January, you're fishing them shallow water oysters. But you're really earning it too. I mean, they didn't get that big by being dumb. You know, they don't mess up that often. I mean, not to say you won't make a terrible cast 10 feet behind them and all of a sudden he decides he wants it, because that's Louisiana. Stuff like that. Redfish just lose their mind sometimes, you know. I always say, like I said earlier, you know, if it's been kind of slow, I'm like, we need a kamikaze. And I always call like those big dumb redfish that are just like coming right at the boat, high, happy, just about to eat the fiberglass off the bottom of your boat. That's a kamikaze, you know. He's gonna eat no matter what you do wrong.
Yeah.
But you know, redfish are the bulls. They're not, I don't want to say as easy as the slot fish. They're just not as forgiving. You know, you make a bad cast, he's probably gone. You know, with the slot fish, especially the springtime and the early summer, I just love how they act. They act so good for you, so good for people that haven't done it before, especially. Super forgiving, just like, you know, you make a bad shot, oh well, look right there, there's another one, throw at him, you know. Turn and throw at him, and you hit that one in the head, okay, whatever, you know. Oh wait, he's coming back, throw it back in there, you know. That's just how it is with them. And I feel like you can do more things with them, you know. I throw gurglers at them, I throw poppers at them. I'll throw poppers at them when they're 3 feet on the bottom sometimes and they come and eat it. You know, bull reds don't do that often. It's just, I love the slots for how they act, you know. They're super forgiving. And I feel like it's some of my favorite types of fishing, because you're usually in like thick vegetation and it's you're hunting them. Like, you're looking around and you look and there's a bunch of snotgrass or hydrilla or whatever it may be matted up, and there's one hole you got to put it in. Not because it's a spooky fish, but because literally if you put it anywhere else, it's in the grass. He doesn't even know it's there. So I feel like it's real technical like that. It's kind of like, I always call it like Cajun bone fishing, you know. You're making like accurate casts, not super long, crazy casts. You're making accurate, you know, shorter casts, and you get a better reaction out of them. You know, they just, the things they do in the areas they go, and they're just so much prettier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's rare you get that pumpkin looking bull red. I mean, you'll catch them, but like, you know, you catch a 7-pound red in Delacro in, you know, May in a bunch of grass, and he's, first of all, whatever you threw at him, he probably lost his mind and, you know, chased after it if he's acting right. I mean, they don't act right all the time. But if he's acting right, he went nuts. And then you get him up, and you're like, I've caught him before where there's, I mean, many times, you know, all summer long sometimes, where there's no white on him at all. The whole fish is orange. It's just orange, like, you know, like a pumpkin all the way up underneath. And that's just so cool to me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and they're all so different. You had mentioned that on the boat today because you were tagging redfish, and, you know, every single one has its own little characteristics and
their colors on their head, you know, their scale patterns. I mean, I always say their spots like our fingerprints, you know. They may look the same, but if you took 10,000 spots of a redfish and matched them all up, there's no copies. They're all completely different, you know. It's nature for you. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just so cool, like, you know, you'll see slot fish going, you know, you'll see them up on the bank with their eyeballs out of the water crawling around, and you're like, what is that fish doing? And then you'll see 20 of them together in a group, you know, in 3 feet of water, and just, you know, you just like you caught that first one today, and when you hooked it, you know, there was two others that floated up, and it was kind of, those fish were acting a little weird, I think. You know, we just had that big tournament come down, which, you know, maybe put a bunch of pressure on them. But anyway, a lot of times I'll see the slot fish, you hook one, and if the fly's like on the corner of his mouth, his friends are like, screw you, man, I need food. And they're eating a damn fly out of that fish's mouth. And I'll tell the other guy, if I got two clients with me, I'm like, grab a rod, get in there, you know?
Mm.
Like, we're gonna catch them. You know, just throw whatever you got. I don't care. Throw something with your hand in there. It's just so much fun. And I feel like you don't get that as much with bigger fish. I mean, big fish are cool. I always tell people big fish are made for Instagram, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to see that big red on Instagram. I'm like, I could show you some way cooler acting fish if you come with me, you know, and do this, you know, catch slot fish. And not just a spring, too. We get it early fall, you know, October, end of October, really. And then, like, beginning of November and all, we do it a lot. But just a lot more things. I've just really become, you know, so much in love with just watching them eat, and compared to like catching them and landing them, watching a slot fish eat over a big fish is just so much more cool to me.
Yeah, it was great today. If you're good with it, I got a long list of rapid fire questions brewing in my head from our time today. My first one is, you know, when I think of Louisiana too, I think about Cajun cuisine, and I like talking to different guys about food. What do you feel like is your best Cajun dish that you cook? And give us a little rundown, if you're willing, of how you cook it.
I mean, as far as for me, I mean, it's a lot of things we eat here too. Like, I don't even realize it's like real Cajun stuff until, you know, I see other people doing it, but I'd say for me, it's probably, I mean, just like we were talking about doing crawfish, I feel like that's such a alien thing everywhere else in the country. And it's so funny because, like, yeah, I guess it is kind of weird. We're taking these creatures that crawl around the mud and eat dead things, and we're cooking them and eating them. But I like doing that a lot. I'd say that's the most Cajun thing I can, you know, think of off the top of my head.
What's your recipe there then?
I mean, pretty much, I don't do anything too fancy with it. I like to just, you know, I'll throw in, my biggest thing with crawfish is you got to have the citrus. I feel like you got to have your lemons, you got to have, you know, your oranges and all. I feel like that really makes them taste, I don't know what it really does as far as the taste, but you could definitely taste the sweetness in it a little bit. I'll do that, you know, we'll throw some jalapenos in there sometimes, but that and mixing that you know, the liquid boil with the powder boil is a big deal for me. That's I'll see people just do a liquid and I'm like, or just a powder or something like that, I'm like, yeah, you taste that difference for sure. You get like a hot and a spice. You get like a spice from like the liquid and a hot from the powder, and it kind of makes it all perfect. But we do that a lot, and that's one thing that you take crawfish away from me, I'm done. I'm not, you know, that's my number one thing for the year probably.
Yeah, that sounds great. So being in Louisiana, and it's a destination for a lot of, you know, not just fly fishers, but just red fishing, flats fishing, sight fishing. What's the biggest mistake, common mistake that you see people make?
My biggest thing with sight fishing and, you know, sight fishing redfish is like, you know, we saw it a couple times today where you were just wanting to lead them so much, you know, and I feel like it hurts you a lot. Not really as much right now because we didn't have that super thick vegetation, but like just imagine if that grass was twice as thick and you let him by, you know, 6 feet. He's not even in the same area code, you know. He's like, his mind is on something else. I think the biggest thing, though, is that is people wanting to lead the fish so much. And it doesn't matter if it's a spinner rod with a spoon or crawfish or swim bait or a fly rod, you know. Like, I tell people sometimes, I'm like, hit them in the head, you know. And they're like mind blown by that. And I'm like, well, yeah, I just want you to get it closer to them. Not because, you know, they'll see it from far sometimes, but they're not going to spook. I mean, you hit them directly in the head and they're up high, you know, shallow, they're going to spook. But we can fix that. It's harder for me to explain to get it closer than it is for me to tell you, you know, get it a little bit further away from them. Everybody just wants to lead them so much. Whereas, like, these fish, I mean, you got to think, though. I mean, when we're looking around fishing, you're going to see crabs. You're going to see shrimp everywhere. If you throw that thing 10 feet away, imagine how many things that they can eat they're going to cross in that 10 feet. Whereas if you just put it on them, let it sink, and I always tell people, imagine as a 5-gallon bucket on their nose, land it in that 5-gallon bucket. You know, throw your fly, throw whatever you got in that 5-gallon bucket, let it sink, jig it, whether it's a, you know, spinner rod or bait caster, or strip it with the fly. They're going to decide in the first 12 inches if they're going to want to eat it or not. And if they don't want it, then, you know, they might spin around, freak out on it, and try them again. I always tell people, if you lay eyes on that fish, you keep throwing at them. Because I've had it where, you know, you throw at him on the left side, he's coming left to right, and you throw at him, you thought it was a good cast, you know, strip, and he kind of like sees it and spins around. You're like, oh, he's gone. I'm like, throw at him again. You throw at him going the other way, he eats it. It's just, there's no telling. You know, sometimes they just like it a certain way. Sometimes, you know, I always say they're like goldfish. They have a short-term, you know, memory, and you throw it at them one way and they, you know, they go away, and then you see them float up again, throw at them again. They're like, oh, that looks good. You know, and you're like, what is going on? But that's just how they are. Just keep throwing at them and just get it closer to them. You know, we're not leading these fish by 10 feet. They're not, you don't have to worry about them spooking. I'd rather you hit that fish in the back than, you know, throw it 10 feet in front and we never know if he wanted that fly or not.
Yeah, that's good. For you looking back over the years, who or what do you feel like was the most influential thing for you developing as a guide?
I think one of the biggest things for me is just like from guiding is just being around people. You know, I learned real quick. It was more about, you know, just catering to people and being good with people than it was the fishing. Like, of course I love the fishing and it drives me nuts when, you know, we're not catching fish, but like, I learned real quick, and you learn that on the days where you really get your ass kicked, you know, wind beat you up, and maybe you didn't even catch a fish, maybe you didn't see a fish that day, and that's the days when you're like, I can think of so many days, or a couple days where I've had that were, you know, just bad days, where those clients are the ones that are some of my favorite clients, because that's when you really are like, these guys are awesome, or these guys, you know, or I don't want to fish them again, but more often than not, you pick out some really good people that way, you know. And it's just being around people, listening to them talking with them, you know, helping them and coaching them through it. I hate when I hear people that went fishing with somebody and they're like, oh, yeah, this guy yelled at me all day, you know. I missed a couple fish. I know I'm not that good. He made me real nervous. I hate that because I'm like, you're coming on this boat. You're spending your money, you know. And I know it's about catching fish. We got to catch some fish. I hate not catching fish more than anybody. But like at the end of the day, it's all about the experience your people had. And I think when that kind of clicked for me, I was like, this is really cool, you know. And it was through a multitude of people, you know. I think one of the better people person in this fly fishing world we have down here is Shane Mayfield. That's down there in Port Sulphur with us. And he's great with people. And I learned, you know, he'd always mess with me because I'd be like, yeah, I just hate not catching fish, you know. Like, I just hate not, you know, these guys missed a bunch of fish and it drove me nuts. And he's like, look, if they had a great time, then you just, you know, you have a good day with it. Don't beat yourself up because you're thinking, what could you have done to make them catch fish? I mean, you know, and then once I realized that, I was like, oh, yeah, you know, even if I have some guys that can't do it, just help them, mm-hmm. you know, just be like, and that's kind of how I am now. I'm like, oh, you hit them in the head, whatever, you know, let's go find another one. You know, mm-hmm. don't worry about it. Forget about that fish, you know. And I'm no expert caster by any means, but if I see somebody doing something that I think I could help them, you know, hey, why don't you try this, you know, not like, hey, asshole, what the hell was that, you mm-hmm. know, like. Just tell that guy, and I'll even go up to the front sometimes and grab the rod and be like, look, let's try this. This is going to help, you know, little things like that.
Yeah, that's good. That to me, that I think just hearing you talk too about Shane, you know, kind of leads to another question I had, which it seems like, and I don't know if this is just my vantage point or what, but it seems like you're pretty well connected to a lot of the other guides here and older guides here. As you look at a lot of the older guides in the area, what are some things that you see in them that you aspire to as somebody who's younger and towards the beginning of their career?
I'd say my biggest thing with that is, you know, I look at some of these older guys that, you know, have been real persistent with it, and, you know, they've been around because, you know, people like them and people enjoy them and they put people on fish. And I've kind of gotten to that stage where, like, I'm getting a lot of my regular guys, a lot of return guys, and I just enjoy that, you know. And once you get a lot of people that, you know, they know what to expect, you know what to expect, it makes the day so much better. It makes the best days better and the worst days, you know, better. So there's mm-hmm. It never hurts things to have it like that. And I'd say that's the biggest thing I see with people is just, like, you know, staying persistent and not beating yourself up. I mean, it's like Captain Rich over there, you know, the little Waldner spoon fly. That's Captain Rich. He's out of Port Sulphur over there. And he's in his 70s. And that dude, he is the first one to launch every day and the last one to leave. It doesn't matter. You know, he's pulling around. And his thing is, like, you could be blowing 25 and socked in clouds. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be a rough one today. Mm-hmm. And Rich is trying to launch his boat in the 30-degree weather at 6 in the morning, you know. He's like, oh, we're going to get them. They got to eat somewhere. I'm like, I see stuff like that. And I'm like, that's, you know, that's really cool, you know. And that's you know, just staying persistent with it like that and just being good with people, you know. You'll see people come and go, and it's usually not because anything to do with fishing. It's all about, like, how they handle and treat people.
So another thing that I thought was really interesting too is I know that you also do some kayak fishing, and we were talking some about that today, and I was kind of curious about can you make the case for kayak fishing, and can you include in it just a couple tips on how to be successful?
Yeah, I mean, we've actually grown. I mean, kayak fishing over the years down here has just, you know, grown tremendously, which I'm sure it has everywhere. You know, kayaks are getting way more advanced and all. And I really enjoy it because, like, my biggest thing with the kayak, it kind of sets you back down, like, in your roots. You know, you're not running 20 miles today. So, like, what are you going to do? You know, you got to do something different. You got to fish somewhere harder. And that's what I really enjoy about it. And it's real, like, mellow for me, you know. Like, I'm not running around and freaking worried about, you know, running over a pipe somewhere or, you know, jumping some mud flat. It's just like, oh, I'm just going to pedal around and, you know, cast here and fish real hard. And it's real relaxing to me. That's why I love it. And I see a lot of people, you know, they're just like, you know, in the kayak world, they just, you know, want to just cover water and stuff like that. And I learned real quick, it makes you a better fisherman if you have to cover the least amount of water possible, you know. And I feel like that's when I really have learned how to, like, comb areas and really the way I pole and just watching redfish move and all is it's kind of like kayak, like when I'm in a kayak, because I'm going slow, and the quieter you are, you know, the more redfish you're gonna see. I mean, our fish aren't as spooky as other places, but, like, it's the same thing in a kayak, you know. It's so quiet, and I love sight fishing in the kayak and all, and trout fish and all, but, like, you can get right next to a redfish and them not hear you if you're quiet, you know, and drifting the right way. And you take that and apply it to, like, being in a boat in a poling skiff. Mm-hmm. Just slow down a little bit, let the wind do the work, you know. Don't make a bunch of noise. Don't slam things. Don't walk around. Don't rock the boat. You can get right next to fish all of a sudden. You know, it's just things like that. And there's so much. I love the kayak stuff too, because like it's so accessible to everybody. Mm. You know, somebody, a kid, like I remember buying a kayak when I was in high school. I don't even remember what I sold. I remember selling a few things and going to, I think, Dick's Sporting Goods and picking out this awesome, like, $400 kayak. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is going to be so cool. Throw it on top of my car, you know, go wherever, and I could launch it anywhere and just get right into fishing. You know, it was just, it was like, you know, the transition of being a kid on a bike and a bank fisherman to, like, kayak fishing and doing things like that. And I love nothing more than seeing, like, kids that are, you know, in high school and all getting a kayak and, you know, they're looking around hard, they're sight fishing or trout fishing or whatever it may be. It's really cool as far as that goes. And you can go super fancy, man, and have a kayak that costs, you know, $5,000 with y'all your electronics and all. But like at the end of the day, it's all just, you know, about how like accessible you can be to the water.
Mm-hmm. My last question is, I've asked this a few times, but if you could have a billboard that every angler had to see on their way into Louisiana, what would it say?
I don't know, man. It's probably, if I had a guess, it'd probably be stop throwing so far in front of that damn fish. You know, like I say, that's the biggest thing I see that like hinders people when they come with me, mm-hmm. as far as sight fish and redfish goes. But like Jackson, all, you know, we want to lead them. But mm-hmm. with redfish, like, I mean, I've had days where people just can't comprehend that, mm-hmm. and they lead every, you know, 20 fish by 10 feet. And we only catch a couple out of those shots we should have caught, you know, should have had an awesome day and really crushed them. And it's just, that's the big, probably the biggest thing that comes to mind. And I always mess with people. I'm like, keep your expectations low and you'll have a great day no matter how bad the weather is, you know?
That'd be a good, welcome to Louisiana. Keep your expectations low. That'd be one. You know, something interesting about that, just as we wrap up too, is, you know, I've asked that question a dozen times. You're the first person to ever give an answer that would be positive, I think, to the readers of that billboard. You know? So I think it says a lot about you that you want to help people and want them to have a good time, catch fish.
Yeah, I mean, that's my thing with it, man. I mean, like we've talked about it, you go other places and, you know, people, and you know, people have a right to be protective of some stuff. And I've felt that way before, but now I see, like, you know, If you're just together, try to be behind everybody, you know, you can have no enemies that way. And you could get stuff done, whether it's, you know, conservation or having a good guide service or whatever it may be. And, you know, it's just, I don't see a point in not being positive, you know. Mm-hmm. You can't, it's a whole lot easier to just be positive about a fishery than it is to mend a burned bridge, you know, that you probably shouldn't have messed up. And you never know, the other thing too, you never know who somebody is or where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go get on somebody's ass for something stupid, like, oh, you know, that guy was in my spot, you know, that, you know, you'd let that eat you up all day. I mean, I'll see sometimes when I'm in an area for a couple of days and I see somebody, I'm like, damn it, somebody's there, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, oh well. But like, you know, some people really, that it never leaves them all day. They're like, oh, screw that guy. And mm-hmm. I feel like you just ruined your whole day thinking about somebody in one spot all day when we have freaking acres and acres and acres of marsh.
Mm. That's good, man. Well, thanks so much for hanging out today and coming on the podcast. And I look forward to doing another one down the road.
For sure, man. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks again for listening to the Captain's Collective. Please help us out by leaving a review on iTunes and sharing this podcast. We hope that you enjoy. This is the Captain's Collective. A
life that has the stories to back it. A life to be proud of. It's a Winchester life.
Yeah, baby. 6'8 Western. Oh, mule deer, baby. Right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. Join Captain Justin Leake and Meredith McCord for the best fishing action along Panama City Beach. Tune in to Chasing the Sun every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.